Polarized is brought to you by Amazon and FeedPress. To support the show, visit our sponsors page at hologramradio.org/sponsors. You can also send us a donation at hologramradio.org/donate. And now the show.
In the spotlight tonight, guns, paranoia, and hatred.
And I'm here to tell you, 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms. Doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken. We will not relinquish them.
New World Order is generally accepted to be a conspiracy theory where people believe that there are elites out there forming some sort of special authoritarian government.
Whenever I turn on the TV these days, I see one pundit or another telling me that both sides are responsible for the vitriol in this country.
The only good communist is a dead communist! Yeah! The only good communist is a dead communist!
Welcome to Polarized on Hologram Radio, a weekly podcast talking about things that tend to divide the public right directly down the middle, with your hosts, Tyler Street and Alex Knight.
How's it going, World Wide Web? We're back again, and you're listening to Polarized with yours truly, Tyler Street. And with me, of course, is our ever-present technical wizard and my partner in crime, Alex Knight.
Well, you're too kind, sir. Hello, everyone.
Yes, that's right. Say hello. Well, today, folks, we're going to be talking about Christian terrorism and right-wing extremism, another truly happy topic that will most certainly not in any way divide the public. So, what are your understanding of those things, in specifically there, Alex? What does that mean to you if I were to say right-wing extremism and Christian terrorism? Aside from that film we just watched.
Yeah, well, I can conjure up certain adjectives, hate, you know, violence, fear,
that's
fearful.
That's something that really jumps out at you as like an overly publicized thing in the news world of today, though. But you might be surprised to know that the FBI considers it to be quite dangerous. So, I'm at the FBI's website here, and of course, it's the referred to as the terrorist threat confronting the United States. Now, this is not about Islamic terrorism. It's about domestic terrorism. And not domestic Islamic terrorism, but there's a rising trend in the United States since post 9/11 of right-wing groups, sovereign citizen groups, Aryan nationalist groups, white nationalist groups, anti-Obama racist, you know, just basically these right-wing terrorist organizations that have sprung up since then. They've been around for a long time, as long as you can think of, but they actually pose more of a threat in the United States than these supposed Islamic terrorist organizations.
Right. Well, so, I should hope so.
Domestic right-wing terrorist groups often adhere to the principles of racial supremacy and embrace anti-government and anti-regulatory beliefs. Generally, extremist right-wing groups engage in activity that is protected by constitutional guarantees of free speech and assembly. Law enforcement becomes involved when the volatile talk of these groups transgresses into unlawful action. This is a direct quote from the FBI website. On the national level, formal right-wing hate groups such as the National Alliance and World Church of the Creator, that's WCOTC. God, they just love these great big names, you know. The Aryan Nations represent continuing terrorist threats. Although efforts have been made by some extremist groups to reduce openly racist rhetoric in order to appeal to a brighter segment of population and to focus increased attention on anti-government sentiment, racism-based hatred remains an integral component of these groups' core orientations. Right-wing groups continue to represent a serious threat in the realm of terrorism. Two of the seven planned acts of terrorism prevented in 1999 were potentially large-scale, high-casualty attacks being planned and organized by right-wing extremist groups. The second category of domestic terrorists, left-wing groups, generally professes a revolutionary socialistic doctrine and view themselves as protectors of the people against the dehumanizing effects of capitalism and imperialism. They aim to bring about change in the United States and believe that this change can be realized through revolution rather than the establishment of political process. From the domestic terrorist threats in the United States in the 1980s, however, the fortunes of the leftist movements changed dramatically as law enforcement dismantled the infrastructure of many of these groups and the fall of communism in Eastern Europe deprived the movements of its ideological foundation and patronage. So, as you can see, the federal government takes these threats very seriously.
Well, as they should.
Absolutely. Now, and as noted, there are a such thing as far left-leaning groups. You have, for instance, PETA or the Animal Liberation Front. You know, those really, really vocal. Well, I guess but PETA isn't technically a terrorist organization. They just have ties to terrorist organizations. Yes, Ingrid Newkirk, I'm looking at you. We'll get to you one of these days. Now, the United States also faces a formidable challenge from international terrorists. September 11th attacks and bombings of USS Cole in the Yemeni's part of Aden in October 2000, as well as the prevention of apparent attempt by Richard Reid to destroy a Paris to Miami flight in December of 2001, underscore the range of threats in the U.S. posed by international terrorism. Now, everyone knows, of course, about the September 11th attacks and about the big ones that we're all familiar with, the Boston bombings, of course. Now, I'm going to look at a list here that was compiled of the 10 worst examples of Christian terrorism in the United States. We're just going to go through each and every single one of them here, compiled this list at salon.com. So, and here
sounds
they
good.
Are.
Let's do it.
In their entirety, the 10 worst cases of domestic right-wing or Christian terrorism. When white males of the far right carry out violent attacks, neoconservatives and Republicans typically describe them as lone wolf extremists rather than people who are part of a terrorist network or a well-organized terrorist movement. Yet many of the terrorist attacks in the United States have been carried out by people who have long histories of networking with other terrorists. In fact, most of the terrorist activity occurring in the United States in recent years has not come from Muslims, but from a combination of radical Christianists, white
supremacists, I don't think that's a word,
and far-right militia groups. Well, Islamicists, Christianists.
Okay.
I suppose it could be a word. We'll look that one up later. Now, here they are, 10 in the last 30 years, top 10 in the last 30 years in the United States. The Wisconsin Sikh Temple Massacre, October 5th, 2012. The virulent neoconservative-fueled Islamophobia that has plagued post-9/11 America has not only posed a threat to Muslims, it has had deadly consequences for people of other faiths, including Sikhs. Sikhs are not Muslims. The traditional Sikhs' attire, including their turbans, is different from traditional Sunni, Shiite, and Sufi attire. But to a racist, a bearded Sikh looks just like a Muslim. Only 4 days after 9/11, Balbir Singh Sodhi, a Sikh immigrant from India who owned a gas station in Mesa, Arizona, was murdered by Frank Silva Roque, a racist who obviously mistook him for a Muslim. But Sodhi's murder was not the last example of anti-Sikh violence post-9/11 America. On August 5th, 2012, white supremacist Wade Michael Page used a semi-automatic weapon to murder six people during an attack on a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Page's connection to the white supremacist movement was well documented. He had been a member of the neo-Nazi rock bands End Empathy and Definite Hate. Attorney General Eric Holder described the attack as an act of terrorism, an act of hatred. It was good to see the nation's top cop acknowledge the terrorist acts can, in fact, involve white males murdering people of color. Classic example. So ignorant to the truth of these, and so brainwashed by propaganda, these people aren't even aware that Sikhs aren't Muslim, that it's actually a completely different
faith.
I have my problems with both religions, but again, you can't even get your racism correct.
Yeah, that's an ongoing problem for sure. I mean, the lack of education, it's ignorance, right?
I heard it put this way once, that white people love to be racist, but the only racists the right wingers can tell apart are Indianapolis and Daytona.
I would have to agree.
Fascinating though, isn't it? Wisconsin Sikh Temple Massacre. The man killed them because he couldn't tell the difference between Sikhs and Muslims. The more obvious answer is, you know, you don't actually have to kill anybody. Man, what the fuck? All right, moving on. Number two, the murder of Dr. George Tiller, May 31st, 2009. Imagine that a physician had been the victim of an attempted assassination by an Islamic jihadist in 1993 and received numerous death threats from an al-Qaeda after that, before being murdered by an al-Qaeda member. Neoconservatives, Fox News, and the Christian right would have had a field day. Well, a physician was the victim of a terrorist killing that day. But neither the terrorist nor the people who inflamed the terrorist were Muslims. Dr. George Tiller, who was shot and killed by an anti-abortion terrorist, Scott Roeder, on May 31st, 2009. He was a victim of Christian right terrorism, not al-Qaeda. Tiller had a long history of being targeted for violence by Christian right terrorists. In 1986, his clinic was firebombed. Then in 1993, Tiller was shot five times by female Christian right terrorist Shelley Shannon, now serving time in federal prison, but survived that attack. Given that Tiller had been the victim of an attempted murder and received countless death threats after that, Fox News would have had done well to avoid fanning the flames of unrest. Instead, Bill O'Reilly repeatedly referred to him as Tiller, the baby killer.
That was a bad move.
When Roeder murdered Tiller, O'Reilly condemned the attack, but did so in a way that was lukewarm at best. It's interesting that one doesn't see that as an act of terrorism.
What is interesting? Why do you think that is?
I think because they don't want to admit that any part of Christianity can be bad. Part of it is that, and not wanting to recognize white people as terrorists. And seeing right. that, I think part of them sees what that person is doing. They think it's wrong because murder is wrong. But on the other hand, given that they're pro-life, they tend to be on the side of the unborn babies.
Well,
it's an inescapable conclusion.
Yes. Well, I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, even in the media too, you know, you see people on CNN and Fox News struggle themselves to classify these right-wing extremists as terrorists. Like, you know, these people are walking into buildings and shooting people. It, to me, it's very clear cut. That is a terrorist act. I don't understand how anyone cannot believe that.
Well, if I can be blunt about it, it probably doesn't fit their brown people are evil narrative.
Well, that's absolutely true.
America's a Christian nation. Didn't you know that, Alex?
Well,
Jesus goddamn Christ, people. What's up? Like, don't you remember that time when Jesus wrote the Constitution? Don't you remember that? He rose up and he wrote the Constitution and said, fags can't get married, white people won't be marrying no black people, and capitalism is like the greatest system ever devised
hold on.
Cake.
Okay, no, I'm gonna have to call you out on that accent. I know you like to do that quote unquote stereotypical southern accent.
Oh, that's
equals
Larry.
Someone that's not intelligent.
No, that's Larry.
Larry who?
Oh, that's he's a guy that lives inside my head.
Okay,
that's Larry. See, Larry has Larry, an accent. Okay. Larry's from the southern United States.
Just because there are plenty of intelligent people that have southern accents, so not everyone's a redneck.
Yeah, but that's Larry. That's not every. You thought I was, oh, you're funny. Oh, no, that was Larry. You'll be familiar with Larry. He'll pop by a lot.
I know I've talked to you about this before, but I'm not sure if we've brought it up on previous episodes. But, you know, one of the things that I always hear all the time from a lot of Christian people is they make excuses for these other Christian people that are conducting themselves in a manner that they feel isn't what a Christian, a true, quote unquote, true Christian would do. So they kind of want to separate those people from their own beliefs or their own ideas of how or what Christianity actually is. But I don't think that's exactly fair. I mean, yes, these people are imbalanced and yes, they have their own warped views of Christianity, but they're still Christian. So to say that they're not Christian, I don't know about that.
I think a Christian is anyone who calls themselves a Christian.
Well, that's exactly
what makes the Pope less Christian than the Westboro Baptist Church.
You can still disagree. You can still disagree with their actions and call them a monster, but to sort of say that they're not Christian. I don't think that's.
And if you are going to do it, you cannot get mad when Muslims use that excuse because it's the same damn thing. It's called the invocation of the infamous no true Scotsman fallacy. Now, if anyone out there is, look that one up. Just probably describe it better than I possibly could, but it's a logical fallacy that we all find ourselves in from time to time. It's one of these natural human compulsions. It's a fridge logic type situation. The kind of logic that lasts until you open the fridge door. You open it up, you're like, ah. Suddenly dawns on you what the answer is.
Right.
Yeah, see, okay, well, the no true Scotsman fallacy, it goes something like this. No true Scotsman would drink whiskey on a Sunday. But at the same time, someone could say, well, no true Scotsman would drink whiskey on a Sunday unless he was wearing a kilt. And you can just go any particular way you want. No true Scotsman would do anything, or no true Scotsman could do anything, because it's different from person to person. No true Scotsman fallacy. People do that all the time. Well, those people weren't real Christians. Well, the Westboro Baptist Church, they're not real Christians. You know, Obama, he's not a real American.
Well, there are plenty of people that still believe that.
Yeah, well, those people are mostly stupid.
Well, I mean, just that documentary that you got me to watch. I mean, there was that one lady that approached McCain and said she actually thought Barack Obama was, what did she call him, an Arab?
He's an Arab.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor McCain. He looked so just embarrassed for her, embarrassed for himself, and probably embarrassed the cameras were running. Pardon me, everyone. The film in question that we're talking about is Revolution? Re-evolution on Reich Wing Watch. It's a channel on YouTube. It's a compilation of right-wing news reports of terrorist attacks, the sovereign citizen movement, freedom on the land, acts of terrorism against President Obama, perpetrated by white people and right-wing Aryan groups. It's a fascinating watch. It's very interesting. It's a bit melodramatic. The music kind of gets on my nerves, but all you can look forward to is they are presenting a narrative to you, but it's not narrated by someone trying to tell you how to think. They show the information, you make up your own mind.
Yeah, I actually like the play on words with the name Reich Wing Media.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
The Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church shooting, July 27th, 2008. These are not old reports, if you might have noticed there's a pattern here. These are all fairly recent. On July 27, 2008, Christian right sympathizer Jim David Adkison walked into the Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, during a children's play and began shooting people at random. Two individuals were killed while seven others were injured but survived. Adkison said he was motivated by a hatred of liberals, Democrats, and gays. He considered neoconservative Bernard Goldberg's book, 100 People Who Are Screwing Up America, his political manifesto. Adkison, who pleaded guilty on two counts of first-degree murder, is now serving life in prison without parole. He was vehemently anti-abortion, but apparently committing an act of terrorism during a children's play was good old Republican family values. While Adkison's act of terrorism was in fact reported on Fox News, it didn't get the record round-the-clock, all-the-time coverage your typical act of Islamic terrorism or a school shooting would have garnered. Tragic. But again, that doesn't serve their narrative. If it can happen to anyone, they don't have an enemy they can all unite against. If it's just crazy people, well, shit, there's crazy people in every group. I mean, come on, these people think there's a war on Christmas. That's delusional. That's just very, very, very delusional. And yeah, just why? How? What the fuck? How can you say that you're on the side of good old-fashioned Christian values then walk into a school and shoot up people during a children's play? Those kids' lives are changed forever.
Indeed.
You'll never forget the day that the guy came in and tried to kill you. Shot up your teachers. And he was inspired by a book that was one of those 100 fact books.
I'm shaking my head now.
Yeah, if you could be here and see this right now, people, it would just be, just see the looks of dissatisfied and saddened looks on their faces. All right, moving on. The murder of Dr. John Britton, July 29th, 1994. To hear the Christian right tell it, there is no such thing as a Christian terrorist. Of course, you can tell that to the victims of the Army of God, a loose network of radical Christianists with a long history of terrorist attack on abortion providers. One Christian right terrorist with ties to the Army of God was Paul Jennings Hill, who was executed by lethal injection on September 3, 2003 for the murders of abortion doctor John Britton and his bodyguard James Barrett. Hill shot both of them in cold blood and expressed no remorse whatsoever, insisted he was doing God's work and has been exalted as a martyr by the Army of God. See, again, that's another thing that protects them. I'm a martyr, or I ask God for forgiveness. I may have done bad things, but I'm a Christian, so I'm going to heaven anyways. If all you need to have your actions justified is to say that God said it was okay, well, then there are no unjustifiable actions. And I don't know if what they're doing when you get down to the actual specifics and rule books and guides in the Bible, I'm not quite certain that they were behaving unchristianly. Number five, the Centennial Olympic Park bombing, July 27th, 1996. The organization Army of God has also praised the work of Eric Rudolph, who is currently serving life without parole for a long list of terrorist attacks committed in the name of Christianity. Rudolph is best known for carrying out the Olympic Park bombing in Atlanta during the 1996 Summer Olympics, a blast that killed spectator Alice Hawthorne and wounded 111 others. Hawthorne wasn't the only person Rudolph murdered. His bombing of an abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama in 1998 caused the death of Robert Sanderson, a Birmingham police officer and part-time security guard, and caused Emily Lyons to lose an eye. Rudolph's acts of Christian terrorism include bombing the Otherwise Lounge, a lesbian bar in Atlanta, and in 1997, an abortion clinic in Atlanta suburb. Rudolph was no lone wolf. He was part of a terrorist movement that encouraged his violence, and the Army of God continues to exalt Rudolph as a brave Christian who is doing God's work. Any thoughts on that, Alex? You're shaking your head over there.
I think it's pretty obvious that any reasonably intelligent, clear-headed, fairly liberal person would obviously say that this is irrational, illogical, dangerous, paranoia behavior. But when you actually look at the Bible, the problem with the Bible is that everyone has their own interpretation of it. And even in certain sects of Christianity, and even among churchgoers, there is a lot of debate about what is gospel and what isn't gospel. So nobody really agrees with each other in general, which should tell you that the source material that you're dealing with is incredibly problematic. If you actually take everything that's in the Bible and believe it word for word, I can see why somebody would want to act the way that they do, because there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that is horrific. The ritual killings,
which we will be getting to very shortly after this list is concluded.
There's the Bible is incredibly bloody and violent. And if you, like I said, if you believe it word for word, yes, it kind of actually makes sense. Obviously, I'm not going to condone the behavior, and it's terrible, but I kind of see why those people think that way.
Oh, absolutely. There are so many passages in the Bible that are just borderline insane, and some that are just straight up genocidal. We'll be getting to that later, but for right now, let's continue on with that list. Done by our wonderful friends at Salon.com, who are paying us nothing to promote their page. Number six, The Murder of Barnett Sleepian by James Charles Kopp, October 23rd, 1998. Much like Paul Jennings Hill, Eric Rudolph, and Scott Roeder, James Charles Kopp is a radical Christian terrorist who had been exalted as a hero by the Army of God. On October 23, 1998, Kopp fired a single shot into the Amherst, New York home of Barnett Sleepian, a doctor who performed abortions. Mortally wounding him, Sleepian died an hour later. Kopp later claimed he only meant to wound Sleepian, not kill him, but Judge Michael D'Amico of Aaron County, New York, said the killing was clearly premeditated and sentenced Kopp to 25 years to life. Kopp is a suspect in another anti-abortion terrorist attack, including the non-fatal shootings of three doctors in Canada, although it appears unlikely that Kopp will be extradited to Canada to face any of those charges. That's right, Canada. Even our country is not safe from this nonsense, despite us being one of the more secular, well, supposedly one of the most secular states, but we'll get to that in a later date. Number seven, Planned Parenthood bombing, Brooklyn, Massachusetts, 1994. Seldom has the term Christian terrorist been used in connection with John C. Salvi on the AM talk radio or at Fox News, but it's a term that easily applies to him. In 1994, the radical anti-abortionist and Army of God member, wow, we're getting a lot of those Army of God fellows in here. We have to do a special just on them, I think, attacked a Planned Parenthood clinic in Brooklyn, Massachusetts, shooting and killing receptionists Shannon Lowney and Lee Ann Nichols and wounding several others. Salvi was found dead in his prison cell in 1996, and his death was ruled a suicide. The Army of God has exalted Salvi as a Christian martyr and described Lowney and Nichols not as victims of domestic terrorism, but as infidels who got what they deserved. The Reverend Donald Spitz, a Christianist and Army of God supporter who is so extreme that even the radical anti-abortion group Operation Rescue disassociated from him, itself from him, but also has praised Salvi as well. Fascinating. Some of them are too extreme to support them publicly, but you'll still say, well, yeah, that guy's technically a hero. Where do you get your values? How can you on one hand say Christianity is a force for good, but look at stuff like that, and then say Islam is a force for evil because of the same... What? this problem people have looking at their own selves in a mirror, or looking at their own organizations in a mirror. All right, here we go. Suicide attack on IRS building in Austin, Texas, February 18th, 2010. When Joseph Stack flew a plane into the Echelon office complex where an IRS office is located, Fox News coverage of the incident was calm and matter-of-fact. Republican Representative Steve King of Iowa seemed to find the attack amusing and joked that it could have been avoided if the federal government had followed his advice and abolished the IRS. Nonetheless, there were two fatalities: Stack and an IRS employee, Vernon Hunter. Stack left behind a rambling suicide note outlining the reasons for his attack, which included a disdain for the IRS as well as a total disgust with health insurance companies and bank bailouts. Some of the most insightful coverage of the incidents came from Noam Chomsky, who said that while Stack had some legitimate grievances, millions of Americans shared his outrage over bank bailouts and practices of health insurance companies. The way he expressed them, of course, was absolutely wrong. But again, that is a white person flying a plane into a government building.
I don't share my love of the IRS or any organization like that. However, there's a right way and a wrong way to go about doing things. Clearly, what he did was so far over that line and was horrendous. But any of these people like that have these tax issues, I mean, they created their own problems. Like, maybe if you ran your business properly, you wouldn't have had to, you know, hire the right people to do your bookkeeping. I don't know what the details were or how he got to that point, but you know, most people that run businesses properly do not have issues with the IRS.
Generally speaking, no, some people do get screwed over by the IRS, but there is a difference between flying a plane and dropping leaflets and crashing a plane into a fucking building.
Exactly. I mean, this is very unhealthy behavior. I shouldn't even have to say this.
Both ways do things, but, oh, God, there's better ways to address the issues in your life other than smashing them to bits, shooting them apart, or trying to fuck your way out of them every time. You can't fix every problem with your dick. Okay, moving on.
Headline.
Number 9, the murder of Alan Berg, June 18th, 1984. One of the most absurd claims some Republicans have made about white supremacists is that they are liberals and progressives. That claim is especially ludicrous in light of the terrorist killing of liberal Denver-based talk show host Alan Berg, a critic of white supremacists who was killed with an automatic weapon on July 18, 1984. The killing was linked to members of the Order, a white supremacist group that had marked Berg for death. Order members David Lane, a former Ku Klux Klan member who had also been active in the Aryan Nations, and Bruce Pierce were both convicted in federal court on charges of racketeering, conspiracy, and violating Berg's civil rights, and given what amounted to life sentences. Robert Matthews, who founded the Order, got the name from a fictional group in white supremacist William Luther Pierce's anti-Semitic 1978 novel, The Turner Diaries, a book Timothy McVeigh was quite fond of. The novel's fictional account of the destruction of a government building has been described as the inspiration for the Oklahoma City bombings of 1995, and that brings us into number 10, Timothy McVeigh, April 19th, 1995. Neoconservatives and Republicans grow angry and uncomfortable whenever Timothy McVeigh is cited as an example of non-Islamic terrorism, pointing out that a non-Muslim white male carried out an attack as vicious and deadly as the Oklahoma City bombing doesn't fit into their narrative that only Muslims and people of color are capable of carrying out terrorist attacks. Neoconservatives will claim that bringing up McVeigh's name during a discussion of terrorism is a red herring that distracts us from fighting radical Islamists. But that downplays the cruel, destructive nature of the attack. Yes, please don't bring that up. It's distracting us from pointing the finger at the brown people. Prior to the Al-Qaeda attacks of 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing McVeigh orchestrated was the most deadly terrorist attack in U.S. history. 168 people were killed and more than 600 were injured, When McVeigh drove a truck filled with explosives into the Alfred P. Mariah Federal Building, his goal was to kill as many people as possible. Clearly, McVeigh was not motivated by radical Islam. Rather, he was motivated by an extreme hatred for the U.S. government and saw the attack as revenge for the Ruby Ridge incident of 1992 and the Waco siege of 1993. He had white supremacist leanings as well. When he was in the U.S. Army, McVeigh was reprimanded for wearing a white power T-shirt he had bought at a KKK demonstration. McVeigh was executed on July 11, 2001. He should have served life without parole instead, as a living reminder of the type of viciousness the extreme right is capable of.
Yeah.
That concludes our 10-item list from Salon.com. And I gotta tell you, that's pretty scary. Up until that moment, Timothy McVeigh was the leader in domestic terrorism against the United States government. It was white supremacists.
There's still so much of that, and I think it's I feel like it's only going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know. I mean, what is the FBI doing about this? Are they actually making a conceited effort to target and find these people and arrest them?
Well, as we watched in that video, you have noticed there are a lot of cases of the U.S. government being able to stop these attacks before they happen. So, yes, they are taking them very seriously. Problem is, the public does not see what we're seeing right now. The States, it's not as...
No, I mean, well, the media goes after the Muslim stereotypes that all Muslims are terrorists. That's what they choose to focus on. They don't focus on the terrorist acts that are going on at home, and they don't focus on the people that are causing them, which are primarily white right-wing supremacists.
Wikipedia have to say about right-wing terrorism in the United States. During the 80s, more than 75% of right-wing extremists were prosecuted in the United States for acts of terrorism, although they carried out only 6 attacks during that decade. The Order. Wonderful. They're known for attacking sex shops and synagogues when they're not bombing abortion clinics as well. Oh, and for those out you who are wondering, Timothy McVeigh did have an accomplice. His name was Terry Nichols, in case anyone was wondering. Yes, he also was a attender of a Michigan militia group and gun shows. Very common among right-wing conservatives in the United States. They're big fans of gun shows. The gun show, apparently, if in case anyone out there is curious about that, is one of the biggest loopholes for the sales of guns in the United States to underage people and people with mental illnesses. People at gun shows are gun dealers, and they can just sell them there virtually unregulated. It is the loophole that allows guns to be moved around in the States.
We want to take a moment to thank those who make Polarized possible. It's that crazy time of the year again where many of us scramble to find last-minute gifts for those we care about. What better way to do that than by shopping online and avoiding long checkout lines and crowds? The best way you can support what we do here is to visit our sponsors page at hologramradio.org/sponsors and click on one of our Amazon banners for either Amazon UK, USA, or Canada. It's the same exact shopping experience you know and love, with no additional work on your part, only that we get a portion of the sale, which greatly helps. We're also brought to you by FeedPress. FeedPress is a simple, intuitive, and powerful RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform featuring powerful subscriber, podcast download tracking, integrated newsletters, automated publishing to popular social networks such as Twitter and Facebook, a slick drag and drop podcast hosting interface, and everything you need in order to submit an optimized feed to iTunes. With 250 megabytes of flexible file storage that rolls over monthly, you can easily upload 4 episodes per month. Upgrading storage is easy and affordable, starting at a flat rate of just $20 for 1 gigabyte. Everything here on hologramradio.org is hosted by FeedPress. So sign up today by going to feed.press/polarized and try it on a 14-day no contracts or commitment trial. Use our promo code POLARIZED during checkout to make sure you get 10% off your first year. And now, back to the show. So gun control or the lack thereof. One of the things that came up recently with President Obama's speech to the American public was trying to put a cap on the easy public access that people have to military-grade weaponry, which is a serious issue right now. And you look at a lot of these terrorist attacks that happen here, it's people with these automatic assault rifles and extremely powerful weapons. And I think a good first step is to find a way to get rid of those, because the moment you make those things difficult for people to get, you're not eliminating the problem, but you're mitigating the problem pretty heavily. And I think that absolutely needs to happen.
Not to mention that most gun-related violence are crimes of passion. And if a person just has an extra hour usually to calm themselves down and don't have access, such easy, ready access to firearms, most of the time, they'd be able to talk themselves out of it. Just a thought
You would think, hopefully.
All right. So now, with these talk of how Islamic extremists are the only dangerous terrorists out there and Christian terrorism and right-wing extremism, now there's this ongoing sentiment that the perpetrators, as we talked before, aren't really Christian. So now we could argue back and forth about that, about what really being a Christian is, what really being a Pastafarian is, for all I care. It doesn't really matter, but let's get down to the basics. Let's see what it says in their rule book, because, you know, they have a rule book. Is there anything these people have done that is not technically Christian? Kill people who don't listen to priests. Anyone arrogant enough to reject the verdict of the judge or of the priest who represents the Lord your God must be put to death. Such evil must be purged from Israel. Deuteronomy 17:12. That's a lot of people in America that don't listen to priests. Kill homosexuals. If a man lies with a male as with a woman, both of them shall be put to death for their abominable deed. They have forfeited their lives. Okay, well, so clearly the Bible doesn't have a problem with murder or sex discrimination.
Well, this shouldn't be news to anyone who's read it.
Oh, this is bad news for John Edward out there. I might actually get behind this one. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that bad. Kill fortune tellers. A man or a woman who acts as a medium or a fortune teller shall be put to death by stoning. They have no one but themselves to blame for their death. You heard it. Straight from the Bible. They was asking for it. Death for hitting dad. Whoever strikes his father or mother shall be put to death. Exodus 21:15. Death for adultery. If a man commits adultery with another man's wife, both the man and the woman will be put to death. Leviticus 20:10. Kill non-believers. They entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and soul, and everyone who would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, was to be put to death, whether small or great, whether man or woman. That's right.
Why do you think it is that so many people that take all of that word for word today don't actually think, don't come to the conclusion that, well, what may have worked back then is not going to work now because we've evolved?
I wouldn't even begin
over
to defend
a large period of time, and that stuff doesn't fly.
I wouldn't even begin to defend the actions of the past. This seems like the writings of a deranged madman.
Well, it is. I'm just saying, you know, burning people at the stake is not, just because it's in the Bible doesn't mean that it's something you do now.
Absolutely not.
Like, you have to adapt with the times.
If it's in the Bible, there's a very good chance we shouldn't do it, because it was written by Iron Age savages who had no idea what the hell they were talking about. They didn't know anything. It's before the Age of Reason. This is before the Scientific Enlightenment. Of course it doesn't make sense. But again, if they want to say the Bible is a religion of peace, they have to find a way to reconcile this. This is an advocation of genocide. Kill the entire town if one person worships another god. Listen to this, people, because it gets nutty. Suppose you hear in one of the towns the Lord your God is giving you that some worthless rabble among you have led their fellow citizens astray by encouraging them to worship foreign gods. In such cases, you must examine the facts carefully. If you find that it is true and can prove that such a detestable act has occurred among you, you must attack that town and completely destroy all its inhabitants, as well as all the livestock. Then you must pile all the plunder in the middle of the street and burn it. Put the entire town to the torch as burnt offering to the Lord your God. The town must remain a ruin forever. It may never be rebuilt. Keep none of the plunder that has been set apart for the destruction. Then the Lord will turn from his fierce anger and be merciful to you. He will have compassion on you and make you a great nation, just as he has solemnly promised your ancestors. Mm. The Lord your God will be merciful only if you obey him and keep all the commands I am giving you today, doing what is pleasing him, Deuteronomy 13:13-19.
So you must commit atrocities in order to win the favor of your God?
That genocide is okay.
So awful and wrong in every way.
Again, but from their perspective, they're doing God's work. And this is the problem I have. Either something's good or it's bad. But in the case of religion, it can be good if God says it's good and bad if God says it is. And it's always, there's a way to interpret it differently. And you shouldn't be defending these things and looking at it going, well, this doth not exist. Oh, no, that's not what it says. Methinks it looks like a weasel. You know, it just doesn't make any damn sense. Or here, kill the followers of other religions. Death for blasphemy. Kill all the false prophets. Infidels and gays should die. Kill anyone who approaches the tabernacle. Kill people working on the Sabbath. Kill bad children. Kill children for being curious. Killed by a lion for defacing God. Killing the Good Samaritan. Kill sons of sinners. God will kill children. Kill men, women, and children. And slaves, camels, and donkeys. Amazing. It's incredible that one can actually look at that with a straight face and say, Islam is a religion of evil. Yeah, I'm sure you can find some very distasteful, despicable things in Islam. But they can't pretend like it's unique to Islam. For God's sake. Or rape. Rape is apparently okay by biblical standards in certain parts of the Bible. Now, one can say, oh, well, there's another part of the Bible that says that's not okay. All right, fine. Show me on the Ten Commandments where it says rape is not okay. Where it says racism is incorrect. Is there any part on those infamous Ten Commandments that says racism, rape, and genocide are bad? Now, one could say they're obvious, but then I could also turn into that book and find some places where it's put out very clearly that it's okay. Where God actually lays out, well, God supposedly lays out plans of how to slay people and how to charge people for it.
Yeah.
50 shekels of silver. Well, how much it costs you if you rape someone's daughter in those times. But if we want to get biblical about it, and we can if people really want to. But why does Christianity get a free pass?
Because it's one of the most popular religions.
In the United States.
Not the most popular religion in the United States. I should have clarified.
These are the questions after thinking about this show we're doing today and watching that documentary and really putting some thought into it. These are the questions I was left with in my head. Why does Christianity seem to get a free pass in the media about this? Why isn't more attention put on that? In my view, theocracy is theocracy.
Right.
What makes a Christian nation better than a Muslim nation? Four, in my mind, and probably in yours too, Alex, a nation with a true separation of church and state, no one need be worried about Sharia law or any religious order at all for that matter. But a country that allows tax exemption of religious institutions is a stone's throw away from no separation of church and state. And if they wanted to curb terrorism, that would be a great way to do it. Wanted to curb religious power and religious dominance in this country, stop handing them over free money.
Right.
Why aren't they paying taxes? Why?
That's a great question.
Can the IRS decide that the Church of Scientology is a religion? These are all questions we should all ask ourselves. Are they in a position to make that kind of declaration? Are we in a position? What makes a religion able to be exempt from taxes? Why should that be an option at all? I think their pockets are filled just enough as it is. Why is it in Canada? The taxpayer had to pay the bill for the United Church of Canada for its place in the residential schools. Why, in a country that is supposedly separated from its church, do things like that happen? And what can we do to stop it? Those are the questions I had. What is going through your head right now? Because one of the big ones in mind is, where are the Islamic martyrs in the United States? We've gone through a lot of Christians here. And the first thing that comes to mind right now is the Boston bombings, but these were white people that were of the Islamic faith. It confuses me, people. It confuses, it scares, and disorients me, but that might just be how it is for everyone.
Yeah, actually, I came across an article on the CBC today, and the headline is, Canadians see Donald Trump's Muslim ban idea not so differently from Americans, polls indicate. I'm just going to read a little bit of it here for you because it's kind of eye-opening. Donald Trump's controversial bid to lead Republicans into the next presidential election appears to highlight differences between Americans and Canadian politics, but a new survey suggests they may not be so different after all.
Do tell, because I wouldn't necessarily find that surprising, because Canadians voted to imprison its own citizens on many occasions in the past. I mean, what makes the government and people of 60 years ago much more different or less scarable than today?
They link to a poll by the Angus Reid Institute, or ARI as they're known, they found that 33% of Canadians strongly or moderately agree with Trump's call for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, quote unquote. While two-thirds of Canadians disagreed and 49% strongly so, that still leaves a large proportion of Canadians looking kindly on a plan that has been widely condemned both in Canada and the U.S. And it puts Canadians on almost the same level with Americans. A Washington Post ABC poll conducted at the same time as the ARI survey found that 36% of Americans supported Trump's ban, with 60% thinking it, quote, it's the wrong thing to do. At this stage of the presidential primaries, Trump is only trying to win over Republican voters. The Post ABC poll suggests his plan is a winner, with 59% of Republicans supporting it and 38% thinking it is the wrong thing to do.
That is not actually that surprising to me when you spell it out like that, because this, we're talking about a country that elected a conservative government 10 years, like three times in a row, for goodness sake. I mean, we had Stephen Harper, that red-eyed squealy little weasel, for so long, and he was making outstandingly bad decisions and very racist, very bad policies too, and it backfired on him then. So even if a very vocal, I don't believe for a second that it's going to be 30%, because the Angus Reid polls are going to be off a little bit, but if 33% of the country or whatever can vote for Stephen Harper, why wouldn't they have the same bigoted views as he? The only problem is it isn't working so much anymore. I think all that Trump has really succeeded in doing is outing all of the racists in cabinet, in office, you know, all those people that were afraid to go out with just how fucking racist they really are now feeling slightly more comfortable now that Trump's, well, I'm glad someone finally said it.
Now, does this number surprise you? In total, 55% of Canadian conservative voters strongly or moderately agreed with Trump's proposed ban on Muslims entering the United States. Does that surprise you at all?
It doesn't surprise me that half of 30% of a country, yeah, so it's not even 30%, it's half of 30-something percent. And yeah, that doesn't surprise me because, again, people did vote for Stephen Harper's ban the niqab thing. That did get some people on his side. It outed a lot of racist people in cabinet and brought a lot of other things to light. I think it would be nice, this is a dream, but it would be nice if Donald Trump's thing was an entire act. And at the end, he's going to say, by the way, you know, folks, I'm not actually running for president. This is just a big publicity stunt for my new show, The Apprentice Extreme Edition, or something along those lines. And he comes out and says, hey, by the way, I just trumped you. I trumped you, America. Congratulations, Republican Party. You really are the most racist jackasses in the world. Honestly, I said I wanted to ban Muslims and you stood behind me. Can you believe you did that? I don't think that's going to happen, but I can dream, can't I?
I mean, a lot of this is not entirely eye-opening to me. I mean, because the article goes on to talk about, liberal voters obviously opposed the idea. Canadians who voted for the Liberals and New Democrats were strongly opposed. However, 77% of New Democrats and 82% of Liberals disagreed with the ban, with about two-thirds strongly disagreeing with it. And in a town hall held by Maclean's magazine this week, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau rejected Trump's hateful rhetoric, which is not entirely surprising because we all know Trudeau pretty well.
It's pretty easy to know where Justin Trudeau stands on things. He's probably going to stand with the underdog.
I think so.
That's where I would too.
This is interesting. It says, note that the ARI poll was conducted using the firm's online panel, whereas the Post ABC poll was conducted by telephone with live interviewers. This difference in methodology has the potential to influence responses, and some caution should be exercised when comparing the two polls.
There we go. See, that's the problem I have with Gallup polls or Angus Reid polls or any of those polls in general. I have a hard time accepting that 44% of America truly doesn't believe in evolution, or at least some variation of it. Anyways, this has been very, very interesting, folks, and we want to find out what you think. What do you feel about this? Do you think Christian terrorism deserves more attention in the national news media? From my perspective, I think it's critically, very seriously, and dangerously underreported. And I think if we're not getting the full story, we cannot make adequate decisions. We cannot make a decision about whether Syrian refugees are dangerous if we can't even look at serious threats in North America.
Yeah, I agree. And like I really feel like if the media covered these things better and more often, that maybe, I mean, my hope, maybe this is too optimistic, but my hope is that people in certain states that lean far right, if they actually saw this stuff actually going on and were well informed and well educated on it, maybe they would have a change of opinion. Maybe they wouldn't look at Muslim people the same way.
Maybe they
would start turning that hatred towards fellow privileged white people that are conducting these acts of terrorism.
Well, the far right does want to prevent the actual history story of the United States from being told. They've actively tried to suppress the truth about the Native American genocide and America's place in the world of eugenics and phrenology and slavery and all kinds of things. I've heard of Republicans describing as the transatlantic slave trade as mass worker immigration. I mean, it's scary. It's the fascist regimes. But I think if half of the conservative government doesn't want to ban Muslims from the country, I think we're moving in a positive direction.
I agree.
I think that's better than the alternative. I think of all 30%, I think that would be a big problem. But yeah. That's our show for today, though, folks. I hope you really, really enjoyed it. Post a comment. Let us know what you think. And if I've offended you, well, why not, let me know. Maybe we can have you on here and you can call me and edit it to my face.
Yeah, gives me some things to think about for the next week or so. Thanks again to those that make Polarized possible, Amazon and FeedPress. Sign up today at feed.press/polarized and use promo code Polarized during checkout to get 10% off your first year. Please visit hologramradio.org/sponsors and our donation page to help contribute and continue to make this show free. You can also leave a rating for us in iTunes, as that helps other people discover the show. To reach your host for comment, send feedback to polarized@hologramradio.org. And on behalf of Tyler Street and I, thanks for listening.